There are ways to boost our productivity that go far beyond that afternoon cup of coffee. Maybe microdosing psychedelics or deep brain meditation. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton explores Silicon Valley and Navy SEALs are revolutionizing how they live and work.
Hello and welcome back. First, a little bit of housekeeping. This is part two of two for this chat about alternative methods for increasing creativity and productivity. So please check out kgoradio.com/techonomics for the other and all of our podcast segments. Or you can search Techonomics on Audioboom, Stitcher, or iTunes. Okay, the thinking here is that there's an underground but surfacing revolution around alternative ways to increase creativity. Now, the areas of research include psychology, neurobiology, technology, and pharmacology. Now, this revolution is spreading to the mainstream, fueling a trillion-dollar underground economy and forcing us to rethink how we can all lead richer, more productive, more satisfying lives. The co-authors of Stealing Fire call this push a revolution, and they've gone a long way to proving that point. Here's my chat with best-selling author Stephen Kotler and high-performance expert Jamie Wheel. We start with Mr. Kotler describing the role of pharmacology in the quest to enhance creativity, imagination, and information processing.
Pharmacology sort of builds out of the kind of the neurobiology, right? And it's another way to tune and tweak, you know, the knobs and levers of the brain in a very precise way that produces these ecstatic states of consciousness, these selfless states of consciousness. We've seen a revolution in research. It started in the 60s, and even though we don't talk about it much, by the time everything was shut down, there were over 1,000 published papers. It's been rekindled at top institutions like Harvard, Johns Hopkins, Stanford, UCLA. And what we learned in the 60s, that these substances can significantly enhance creativity. They can heal trauma. They can help us solve some of the most kind of intractable conditions we face, is being reproven again and again. And it's gone from treating things like end-of-life anxiety, which is, you know, if you're facing death from cancer, that's a permanent state you're living with, all the way through treating PTSD. At this point, the FDA is now in Schedule 1 trials for MDMA, which is technically an empathetic. It expands your sense of empathy, right? On the street, it's known as ecstasy or Molly. You know, it's so effective at treating PTSD, they're now looking at it for treating just regular anxiety and depression, all the way to the microdosing revolution that's going on now, where you've got people taking sub-perceptual doses, so very, very tiny doses of psilocybin, occasionally mescaline, and LSD. And these don't tend to shift your consciousness at all, but they still unlock a lot of the same kind of neurobiology. So while your sense of self doesn't sort of disappear with microdosing, you get a little distance from it, and you do all the heightened creativity that Jamie talked about in the collaboration, a lot of that comes from the brain's information processing machinery, which in these states goes into overdrive. So we take in more information per second. We find links between it more quickly. We come up with breakthrough ideas more rapidly. So that's what's going on in pharmacology, right? And then people are starting to put hard numbers on it. James Fadiman has been running a multi-year study. You know, he's finding that creativity gets enhanced by about 200% while microdosing. Really interesting possibilities there. The research is really getting up to speed. We're starting to get kind of open source databases about reactions. And so there's so much more information out there that the general public can access. And people are really picking this up. Like, the surveys show that 1 out of 10 Americans has a regular annual psychedelic practice. This is widespread. And, you know, I started out with this point, like, we were in very large companies talking to people, and they were telling us that, you know, their whole teams of engineers, not lone individuals, whole teams were microdosing on a regular basis for the enhanced creativity. So we're seeing a lot of it, especially in the Valley and down and in LA and Hollywood as well. So pharmacology is really getting the ability to tune these states with increasing precision and get access to them nearly on demand. So that's what's going on in pharmacology. Technology, our final force, is bringing this stuff to scale. So historically, think about sound. There's all kinds of phenomenal research about sound as a tool for altering consciousness. And I'm not actually talking about binaural beats, which all the research on stuff like that says, hey, this does not work. We can't find a steady signal in the brain. but there is really interesting things going on in sound and loudspeaker manufacturing and things like that, things that are able to produce, kind of like shift the state of an entire crowd of people, producing what University of Chicago anthropologist Victor Turner called commutitas, sort of group flow or flow at scale. What happens when everybody's at a rock concert and you merge with the band and everybody's floating with the music? It's commutitas. It happens at political rallies as well. That's a very big, powerful, shared, altered state of consciousness. You know, it used to be voices dancing around a fire. How many people can you put around a fire? Now you can put 250,000 people into a stadium at a festival and kind of shift everybody's state together. That's one example. Technology kind of goes across the board. There's an entire consciousness hacking movement where it's a giant international DIY movement to use technology to change consciousness, transcranial direct stimulation. People are shooting weak magnetic pulses through their prefrontal cortex to dial back activity there, induce that sense of selflessness. What the technology is allowing us to do, if we have a bias against the pharmacology, if that's not for us, that's not your thing, technology is giving us access to the same states of consciousness with the same impact and the same effects by twisting and turning knobs and levers.
I have seen, or noticed at least, an increase in the interest in neuroaesthetics. The neuroaesthetics labs are popping up more and more, so it seems like this research is catching up in other institutional kind of ways as well, even maybe lagging yours a little bit, but at least there is a tail on it. That seems encouraging.
I got to tell you something. You started this conversation by saying our stuff is way more innovative than what's showing up in Microsoft 365, mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, 3 weeks ago, I was actually with all the, kind of the Midwest leaders who were rolling that out, speaking to them, and we were talking about flow states and the use of flow, very important in coding. In fact, there's, you know, four or five, you Google Microsoft Flow, there's a lot to find. Everything, they're using flow to take in more information for threat assessments. They're using flow for coding. So even the most conservative businesses are starting to get in on the action. And what we're seeing at the cutting edge with organizations like Google or Facebook or the U.S. Navy SEALs or some of the other groups we talk about in that book are kind of full-scale adoptions, you know, building their entire organizational structure around kind of these ideas and changing states of consciousness as a kind of practical daily thing you do in and around work.
I did want to talk about some other applications that were in the book, and you kind of touched on it there. Would you like to elucidate with another example of real-world application of flow?
Sure. I mean, I think one of the most probably relevant for most of us is just literally the anxiety and challenges of just being alive in this busy, hectic world we live in. And I think the World Health Organization just last month released that, you know, suicide is actually a greater threat to human well-being than war and famine combined right now.
Wow.
And you add to the fact that one in four of us are on some kind of psychoactive psychiatric medication, whether that's for depression, anxiety, sleeplessness, you know, learning differences, whatever that would be. And you realize, wow, we really are pretty close to the end of our psychological tethers. And so there's a lot of folks with, you know, deep stress and dis-ease in their nervous systems. And what has been amazingly compelling across different interventions is that these experiences of ecstasis, these experiences of even momentarily setting down kind of 21st century normal, the sort of tired, wired, and perpetually stressed, and just getting to exhale and just getting a reset can have profound benefits for health and well-being. And some of the most sort of, you know, both heartwarming and significant research has been focused on survivors of trauma. And whether that's veterans coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan, whether that's people who have been suffering from childhood abuse or sexual abuse, you know, really like hard stuff to live with and hard stuff to move on from. What they've found is that regardless of the intervention, whether it's pharmacological with an empathogen like MDMA, whether it's neurological priming, like creating flow states for veterans learning to surf, or whether it's just pure kind of contemplative and cognitive with sitting meditation practices, each of those interventions is delivering surprisingly consistent results. All of them just let us change the channel.
My last question for you, Stealing Fire, where did you land on the Promethean myth for this? Was it during the drafting of the book, or is it something you just discovered as you were going through your research?
Credit goes to Jamie on that one. Maybe it goes to, before that, possibly Robert Anton Wilson, who wrote a book called Prometheus Rising, which is surprisingly like lucid, cogent sort of exploration of expanding our consciousness in different ways. I don't know. You'd have to ask Jamie, but it's been in his brain. He's trained as a historian and has a big thing for the Greeks.
Yeah, I mean, funny enough, the Greeks just kept coming back. It's not that we set out to have a bunch of complex Greek language in this book. It just happened to be they seemed to have the words that we needed. But really, for the Promethean element, the idea that there was this sort of, we're tempting the fates, we're stealing from the gods, there's potential hell to pay, but the idea that we can seed civilization and language and art and culture and medicine with what we take down from Olympus, that idea just felt like it was such a recurring theme through history, that there have always been those folks who have been pushing human culture forward, and they've done it at great risk. And the whole point of the four forces intersecting today is that it really feels like today we've got a chance for a different ending. Today we've really got a chance for an open source revolution where regular folks take responsibility for their own possibility. And the chances for this to get shut down, I think, are slimmer than ever, because our ability to propagate it, to share it, to open source it, it's here today. And that's what inspired us to write the book.
Gentlemen, thank you for being thought leaders in such an innovative space. It's been a fascinating conversation, and thank you so much for your time this morning as well.
Jason, thank you.
Thank you.
That was best-selling author Stephen Kotler and high-performance expert Jamie Wheel. Their new book is Stealing Fire, How Silicon Valley, the Navy SEALs, and Maverick Scientists Are Revolutionizing the Way We Live and Work. They are also executives at the Flow Genome Project. Okay, we're a little tight on time. I wanted to keep as much of this interview intact as possible. So for part one of this chat, for reference links, and for more information, please visit kgoradio.com/techonomics, and you can get all of our segments via podcast. Just search Techonomics on Audioboom, Stitcher, or iTunes. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.